This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Embracing Change. It seems like it has been a rather long time since we've sat down to record. Last season was a wonderful revisitation of some of Lakrita's awesome messages over probably the course of a year, I would say, that you recorded all of those.
Probably a year and a half, maybe.
Yeah, there were some awesome messages, and it was a really nice segue into this season. So this season, we're going to be talking about leaving prison to build a pulpit, the 30-year journey. And I am really excited about this, and I want to point out before we even jump into the first episode, today it was 26 years ago that you started the ministry, right?
Yep. Of
having the courage to change.
Yeah, 26 years ago.
What an awesome anniversary. Yeah. And to be able to talk about some of this stuff on that anniversary, mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing. As you know, someone was just saying that to me today, was saying it's amazing, you know, for you to have had 26 really. Last year was the 25th, but 26 consistent years.
Yeah.
In ministry and building this program and looking at from the five to what it is now. Mm. You know, the first five in 1997, five unrelated women that my husband and I brought into our home. And I know people have heard my story, but I'm hoping that this journey is going to be more in depth and more deep, more reality, because my whole hopes for this is to just really let people know how to just do life and realize that you don't have to be fake with God and you don't have to be fake with yourself. Mm. You don't have to be fake with other people. And that even in the beginning when you are, you have to, you know, no, there is a choice that one must create within themselves to make that, I used to hear it all the time, fake it till you make it. And I'm learning that if we're not careful, we'll get in the cycle of faking it and never making it. So,
right.
You know, I think that we have to really be mindful of that. And so when I was praying about this next season of podcasting, I felt like that, you know, because it has been 30 years that I've been out of prison and 26 in full-time ministry. And so, you know, want to really talk about those 4 years to get to the ministry and then, you know, talk about the 26 that has helped me to stay and grow and transform and develop because, I like I said, I started this journey off at chronological age at 32, but I was still a five-year-old little girl emotionally. And we know that the real important years of any child is from birth to 5 years old. And so anything that happens in those years can really take you on a collision crash in life, and it did. And so really want to talk about, you know, the pain, facing the pain, because that is, you know, our first, you know, is going to be what it's going to be about is this first episode is walking back and looking at me facing the biggest pain of my life, which is myself. And I think that, you know, I pretty much want to, you know, look at that. And I have some on the table here. I have like I'm a binder girl, but it is my journey. It's 30 years of information that's in here that helped me to realize through therapy and other ways how to face my pain. So.
And that 4 years was like preparing to launch.
It was.
So it was looking at a lot of different facets of your life and the pain before you were able to actually get to the next step of, okay, God, I've worked through a lot of stuff, so what's the next step?
Mm-hmm.
So that first step, the facing the pain, where did you begin, like, when you were looking at, you wanted to be different?
I think that I'm going to read a letter that I wrote to the judge, and I think that was the beginning where I started in 1993. I went to prison in 1991 for possession of crack cocaine and selling in the district of a school. And yeah, and so I got 3 to 15 years. That was my fifth time in prison, though. And so I had been in prison by this time. I'd been there about 7 months. I went in October of 91 and had, we all heard my story, and I had the moment with God and heard the voice, and, you know, but I think that I've not really talked in depth about even reading the letter that I wrote to the judge. I think we see it in my book, but just the shadow of it, not the real depths of it and me. And today I want to, you know, share that because that was the biggest, that was the, to me, the beginning of me facing me. And so I'm going to read this letter to my people, because that is what, you guys are my people, you're my tribe. And so facing my pain, and this was the letter I wrote, and this is how it started. It says, Dear Honorable Judge Vallen, Nadel, and Powers, because of course I couldn't just have one judge, I needed three, because that's just how I roll. And so it said, I'm writing you all this letter in concern of the motion for shock probation that has been presented to you in my interest. As you already know, I've been incarcerated for 7 months here at the Ohio Reformatory for Women. During the most valuable period of my life, I've experienced a lot of situations that before in my life I took for granted. Some small, some big, but both being very important to how one should maintain themselves in order to live a productive life outside in a community. Upon my arrival here at the institution, I went through a rough time adjusting to my surroundings, which was a big disadvantage to my health. Through that most depressing event, with help from the good Lord as well as good doctors, I survived, only to realize I was still here and had to face myself and this situation that I had placed myself into. From not doing some of the smallest things to remain out from behind these gates and these bars. I woke up inside every day of these gates and these bars, only realizing, how did I get here? And then I had to face myself. I got me here. I'm sure as judges, you have heard a lot of things, and you've received letters and motions has been filed concerning one's life and how short or long that period of time is going to be for their present situation. But as you read this letter, I do hope you find it different from the rest. I'm not going to make you any promises that I can't keep, because I know the promises have always been broken in my life. And that's the truest and the realest I know how to be here. Yes, me. I have taken a long look inside me, which was one of the hardest moments of my life, because I found some things that weren't very positive, nice, true, downright just dirty. And it hurt. Then after doing so, I had to make some decisions that wasn't very easy, nor did I know how to go about properly making these decisions, because I never had made any that was going to be productive for my life. But I knew that it was time to make some real decisions, that was some vital things that had already taken place and that I was in a process. I'm not even really sure what's happening right now with me, but there's something going on. And after the process I've been through, I'm noticing that it was an everyday struggle for me to see things from the perspective that I used to see them at. It wasn't so much as not to make mistakes, but to be aware and learn from it. If I did, and to always continue to upwards so I wouldn't make the same mistakes. Once I got into the habit of this, and I became more conscientiously aware of my behaviors, maybe there will be a chance for me to do something different. So I would know the full impact if I made mistakes. In the event that your decision is to release me under supervision, I'm going to apply this process and knowing what's best for me in order to gain the progress and the freedom that I desire. I'm not going to tell you that I know what to do because I don't. But I'm telling you, if somebody would be willing to teach me, I'd be willing to learn. Yes, I have a format for my life, don't we all? But the one I've had before never worked. So I want to forget the ones that I've had, and I want to find some new ones. I came from some new ones and don't want to go back to the ones I came from. I want to continue a process, and I want to progress, and I want to have expectations that's better than who I am now. In closing, I would like to mention, I do not know what it is going to be, what it is going to take, and what it's going to take for me to become a better person. But what I will say is I want to become one. So thank you for your time and concerning this matter. Sincerely, Lucretia Turner. And so when I wrote that letter, honestly, I look back now, and even today I can cry and see that I had no clue of what I was saying, but I was willing to face the pain, and I was not trying to be someone I wasn't. I wasn't, you know, making him any promises. Honestly, when I look back at this letter today, as I had three judges, I remember that one of the greatest hurt and pain that I had was when the judge, when I was 12 years old, Judge Black, put me in Longview. Mm. And so to go and write this letter to three judges, it just amazes me now to look at that and see how God will use the very thing that breaks you to also build you.
Yeah.
And so to be asking for help from three judges to consider to help me, to teach me, to give me opportunity, when one judge at a very early age forgot about me and left me in a place for almost 2 years. So that created me not to trust authority and not, you know, and not to believe that I could really just trust adults. And so when I wrote this letter and I look at it today, I haven't really read this whole letter in a while. But even today, I had to stop because it just brought tears to my eyes to just realize how much of this letter was probably not me writing it, but the God in me. That there was a God, there's a God inside of me that speaks to me about me to get me to a better place. Mm. And that God was speaking through that letter. And he knew what the future looked like for me if I would be willing to participate. And so I had the participation was facing my pain. And pain is excruciating. And it wasn't just physical, it was emotional. My biggest pain was emotional. The broken pieces that was all over the floor in my life that I had to go back and gather them, put them on the table, and then see which ones were still needed and which ones were true, which ones were lies, which ones was those I conjured up myself to protect myself, defend myself. And that was excruciating.
I bet. The thing I find amazing is the fact that you wrote that letter even after those around you in the prison were saying, oh, they're not going to let you out. This is all a trick. They're just fooling you. And I've heard you talk about that before. But mm-hmm. yet, the God in you had you sit down and write that letter. And that had to have been like, I don't know. I can't even completely fathom where you were in that moment of, you know, trying to process and put down on paper the vulnerability that it took. to say all those things. But like you said, it was the God in you.
It was the God in me, because I didn't even know a word called vulnerability. So, you know what I mean? I know it now, but and even in that. So it was, you know, someone asked me the other day, how did you get back to love? How did you get back to safety? You know, how did you get back to trust? And I said to them, 1 second at a time and one adult at a time. Because the very thing that broke me had to all God also used to put me back together.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I got back to safety. I believe that this letter, like you said, all the people who were around me, because when you're in a crab, I say this all the time, crabs that's in a crab bucket, one I'm trying to get out, the rest I'm going to try to pull him back down.
Yeah.
You know, and so negative people pull down you. You know, we're all in prison. The one thing we all had alike is we all had on prison outfits. So all of us was prisoners. And so, but everyone had an opinion. And I believe that, as you said, what mattered for me in that time was not what they were saying, but something greater in me saying, write the letter. And I didn't even know what I was going to write. But this is what came out. And as the judge said, you know, once the main judge, Judge Vallon, was the one who had to make the main decision, and the rest of them just had to concur. But like Judge Vallon said, that it was against his recommendation and everybody in the courts to let me out. But it was something about this letter, and Judge Nadel said it as well, that created them, something softened their heart. But I now know it was the Holy Spirit.
It was God.
That
yeah.
was already pushing, you know what I'm saying? Because no man, I tell people that you can be a cop and you can be a coach, but it's God who's the cardiologist, because only he can change hearts.
Amen.
And so in all of those things, I had experienced, you know, cops in my life. I had experienced coaches and here, there, you know what I mean, in some kind of way. When I was a child, gymnastic, I had experienced those. But what I had not experienced was a cardiologist. And I feel like that was where my pain was in my heart. And my heart was so broken into many pieces that I couldn't let anyone in. I could not take the risk. And so when the person asked me, how did you get back to love? How did you get back to trust? And how did you get back to safety? In that moment when they asked me that, I thought about the people that helped me get back there, that helped me go back and look at that little girl that was so wounded and face that pain, that, you know, just the pain of the truth. See, you know, I always say that it'll hurt you before it'll heal you. Sometimes it'll also kill you, which is probably half of us need to die. So I had to learn how to understand that it was going to hurt me before it healed me, and it was also going to kill some parts of me that needed to die. And so the authentic person of who I could become would at least have a chance to emerge.
Was there ever a point in time where it felt too much? Did you ever have moments where you wanted to go back to old coping mechanisms, or just even a pause? I mean, I know you're super strong. And
No. It doesn't matter the strength that a person is, the resilience. Of course it was. I'm 30 years in the game right now, and I call it the game of life. And there are times when I have had moments where I've thought, this is hard.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, this is difficult. So when you say that, yes, I've had moments, and I did take pauses. That's what when I got home from prison, when the judge did release me, and the pause was that I found myself in the same condition and position that I had been in with in my neighborhood. And I realized, and I shared this story when I won the Impact 100, and when I found myself back in that situation, I realized that I had to come up with a new solution. Because if I didn't, the thing that I talked about in here was going to be exactly what I was going to go back to, what I was always who I always was.
Yeah.
And so I remember even taking the risk, and I know people have heard this story, but it's mine and I'm going to tell it anyway. I remember taking that risk and asking that judge to, you know what I'm saying, to get me some help because I couldn't stay. And I went to my probation officer, you know, and all of that. To me, all those was pauses. I was pausing like, oh, my God, I was putting the brakes on.
Yeah.
And I was asking, again, vulnerability. I was being vulnerable enough to be honest because one of the things in here is that I want to be the realest person I ever could be. And, you know, and so whatever that realest person was, I knew that where I was not a safe place.
Yeah.
So when someone asks, how do you get to safety? Well, you got to realize that where you are isn't safe. So I think how you get to safety is realizing where you are is where you are right now. Is it safe? Because until you can admit that you're not safe in the place you're in, you will justify that as safe. I had to realize the place I was in was not safe. So I had to take the risk of go asking someone to help me find safety.
What's a good question that someone can ask themselves to assess whether they're in a safe place or not when they're looking at that?
I think that I'll tell you what I had to ask myself. Is this really where I want to be? If I stay here, what's the odds of me ending up where I've been? Do the people around me care about me as best they know how? But the question is, do I have enough strength to care about myself? And I didn't. So I needed to learn what it was to care about me. So I think the note safety is, do you care about you? We talk about self-care in this generation right now. We talk about all those things now. But 30 years ago, those were not words. Those words, vulnerabilities, you know, self-care, all those were not languages wrapped around my situation. They're words and language that we use today and verbiage that we use today. But 30 years ago, that's not what we were using. So I didn't know that I was starting to create those things that I'm living in today, even back then. I just didn't know it. All I knew is that where I wasn't safe.
What were the words that were surrounding you then?
I think the words that were surrounding me is, I don't want to go back to prison.
Okay. So prison.
You know, prison. I think that
captivity,
you know,
probably wouldn't.
You know, yeah. I'm not even going to say captivity, but just the fact that prison.
Yeah.
Like it was something at that point in my life that made me want more. I wanted not to go back where I've been.
Yeah.
And I can't even say the word or the verbiage was that this is not safe. If I stay here, I'm going to end up back where I was.
Yeah.
Because it was familiar. So the word familiar was there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was searching for something foreign. And foreign is something that I've never experienced. So I knew that what was here was not safe, and I knew it was familiar. So the language and the verbiage was, this is familiar. I stay here long enough, I'm going to be slanging dope again. I'm going to be stealing the same old friends, same old stuff. I'm going to be back where I was. And eventually, I'm going to be back to the place that I say I no longer want to be again.
Yeah.
And I told the judge in the letter, if someone would be willing to teach me how to learn how to live, I would be willing to learn. Well, I had to take the risk. Somebody had to teach me.
Yeah.
Because what I already knew, this was familiar. I knew how to do this. I could do that in my sleep.
And you knew what it would get you.
And I knew what it would get me eventually.
Yeah.
And I think that, and in my letter, remember, I said, I'm becoming more conscientiously aware.
Yeah.
So it was like I was becoming awakened. I was awake. I was woke up. There was a moment in time that my eyes saw the reality of the life I was living.
Yeah.
And I can't say, it's almost like John says it well in, I think, the book of Revelation. I can't say if I was in the body or out of the body, but there was something bigger working for me. And it had awakened me. And it had not just awakened my eyes and slumber and sleep, but it was a mindset. There was something in my mind that was waking up to see life from a different perspective. My perception of my surroundings was no longer safe.
Yeah.
And I knew that.
It's like he gave you new eyes.
Exactly.
To look at things that, like you said, were familiar. You had a new way of seen them. And then I'm just reminded of, he gave you the courage to change.
Well, he gave me the courage to ask for help.
Yeah.
That's what it was. He gave me the courage to face the facts of the truth of the matter. Not that the people around me meant me bad, but they didn't mean me good either.
Yeah.
But they didn't mean themselves good. So how could they mean me good? You can't do for no one else what you can't do for yourself. Mm. So I remember going to my probation officer and then facing the fact that when I went, the only option I had was to go back to jail in order to find a placement. Now, that is not the case today. 30 years later, there's all kind of recovery places or, you know, safe places that people can go and resources that's out there. But 30 years ago, not so much for me.
Yeah.
And so the only one that the judge said is like, well, we can put you back in jail and try to get you into a halfway house or get you somewhere, but we're going to have to figure that out. And I remember thinking, you know what? At this point, it don't even matter, because if I don't go now, I'm going to go later. So let me go now. At least I won't be doing time. I'll be spending time.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest revelation I had of facing the fear of being incarcerated. I had really begun to face my fear. Like, I don't really care. Because at this point, it don't matter. I'm going to end up in them bars again if I don't do it now. But at least I'm doing it on my terms.
Yeah.
I'm doing it on my terms.
It had a purpose.
Yeah, and I really didn't even know what the purpose was. But I knew it had something.
Yeah, you had the weight of it.
I had the weight. Like, I was aware that I can either choose to go now and wait on a bed somewhere and let them figure it out, because they had no clue how long it was going to take. Or I could say, no, that's okay. Let me just go and figure it out. And I remember thinking that day when they told me to come back that next morning, and I said, I remember walking up Front Street in Hamilton, Ohio, past the police station, down to the next corner of Court Street, into the courthouse, and remember opening the door. And I'm telling you, if you close your eyes and you know, I don't know if you've ever felt a cold doorknob. And I remember putting my hands on that doorknob and turning it. Mm-hmm. And now I look back, and that was the greatest door that I turned for myself. Because when I opened it up and the probation officer was there, and I walked into that room, and she said to me, we'll have to walk you over to the jail, Butler County Jail. And she walked me over there. She said, we're not going to handcuff you because this is just an intake based on waiting for a bed. But I remember putting my hand on that doorknob and thinking how cold it was.
Wow.
But also knowing that when I turn this knob, I have no clue what's on the other side. But it can't be any worse than what it's been on this side. And then you ask, what are the questions you have to ask yourself to know what's next? Are you willing to do what it takes in order to get out of the situation you're in? And it don't have to be prison. It don't have to be crime. It could be things that you know, even as a grown Christian, just as a mature Christian, that you know that there's things in your life that God is calling you to open, put your hand on the doorknob. He's already standing at the door, knocking. Mm-hmm. The question is, are you going to put your hands on the doorknob, regardless to how cold it is, how hard it is, how you don't know what's on the other side? Are you willing to jump off the ledge anyway, into uncertainty, in order to find the next part of yourself? Because that was the pain I had to face.
Wow, that's so good. That's so good. And worth it, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think just like you said, the familiarity of a situation, the almost effort it takes sometimes to admit, I need to make a change and I need to go this direction, even though this direction feels familiar and comfortable and better to the degree of it won't take much energy. I know what to expect here. But what an awesome thing that happens when you're able to say, no, I need to not do that. I need to take the unfamiliar path. I need to make that decision to change.
Yeah. To make take a new direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to go and, you know, turn down a new street.
Yeah.
I know what's down these streets.
Yep.
So I'm familiar with these streets, but it's a new street. It's called the street called New. I'm gonna turn down these streets. I'm gonna turn down new streets.
Yep.
And yeah, so I ended up in that jail cell for like 6.5, almost 7 weeks. That was the beginning of me learning, because wasn't nothing in that room but the Bible, and so starting to read the Bible, and realizing that even in that, not really familiar with, you know, these stories I was reading, it, they sound fake, but starting to open up to them and realizing, trying to find myself in them or trying to identify with them. And it, like I said, took about almost 7-8 weeks for me to get a placement. And I got that call, I'll never forget, on the 28th of September, 1992, that they had found me a bed in Cincinnati at the Talbert House, and that I was going to go. And I remember being afraid even then, because I didn't know what that meant, to go into a place. I didn't even understand halfway house. I'd never been in a halfway house. I never had been in treatment, or I never had been in a place where they would be willing to help you. I never had been in that kind of situation. So that was another way of facing my pain.
Wow.
Being willing to go into the unfamiliar, because again, that would mean, how did you get to safety? Trusting the people around me.
Mm-hmm.
That God had sent them some kind of way. He had sent them as a guide. We talk about The Shack. If someone's ever watched the movie The Shack.
That's a great movie.
And I think about all the people that was guiding him and creating him opportunities to face his pain about his daughter's death. Those were guides guiding him back to the reality of learning how to become the person he would be without her.
Yeah.
And I had to trust enough to persevere, which we'll talk about in the next one, learning how to persevere. But I had to be willing to face the pain of uncertainty as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, that is just some good stuff. That's just some good stuff. So out there, I hope if you are facing something that, a decision or a pain, I hope that you have heard ways in which you can create a strategy to take that first step. So until next time. Hi, guys. Every week we get the honor of spending time with you, sharing our hearts and offering insights into all the ways we get turned around as people, and hopefully showing an escape route to better choices. Another place that is offering the same type of path for better opportunities is City Gospel Mission. Since 1924, they've been a beacon of hope to the homeless, those recovering from life-controlling issues, youth, and to those needing job services. If you'd like to volunteer or donate, you can visit www.citygospelmission.org. That is www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2021 by LaCreta Bowman.